Hey, friend.
Hey, friend. Happy New Year.
I know. I know. Like, I'm like,
where am I? What time is it?
Exactly. That's the place I'm at currently.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Oh my Lord. Okay.
Before we get into episode 9, I just want to point out, I watched a little bit of episode 8. And when we talked about episode 8, we had mentioned the title, but we didn't have a tie-in for the title, which was No Kindness for the Coward. At the end of episode 8, when they go into the diner, John Dutton says something about the meth heads being cowards.
Oh.
Yes. He said something about that to the guy when he was holding the woman hostage.
Okay.
So that, I think, is the tie-in. I didn't catch the whole thing in my stupor, because of course I've been sick, so I was kind of in a stupor watching it, but that's what he said. And I think that's the tie-in for the title. So,
well, it makes sense. It does.
Yes. Cause they were definitely cowards. I'm still watching that scene over again with Sheriff Donnie. I was like,
Oh
gosh, kills me.
My heart. Yeah,
I know. Didn't see it coming.
I was so not ready. I was going to say, before we get too far into this episode, though, I do want to have a little bit of a shout out. I have been like fully immersed in the podcast Down the Hill. It's about the Delphi murders, and it's super interesting. It's the one where there were two little girls that were murdered, but they went up on the high bridge and one of them actually recorded the man that they believe is responsible for their murder. But the sad thing is, like, the police haven't released a lot of it, but there is still not anybody charged with the crime yet. And it's been like 3 or 4 years. So yeah, but it's a very, very good podcast. It's like a more investigative piece, but it's really good.
And it was called Down the Hill?
Yes, because you hear the man say Down the Hill.
Right. Oh, that gives me chills. Yeah. Oh, that gives me chills.
But it is so good. It is so good. So if you haven't, take a listen.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. And do you want to talk about, we're going to do only episode 9.
Yes.
For this recording. So guys, we're not doing a double episode because there was so much.
There's so much. I'm like, I got to, like, when I watched the finale, I'm like, there is no way in hell we can do a double episode.
No. And that was, it was an hour and a half.
It was. Now I was like, gonna really? Tell you,
wow.
It's so funny on that, because I looked at the guide and I'm like, oh wow, it's going to be like from 8 to like 9:35 or something. And I'm like, I love how Taylor Sheridan is all like, I'm not going to conform to the normal TV faces. You know, he's like, I'm just going to do my own thing. Some of these episodes have been like an hour and 10 minutes. Some of them have been an hour and 15 minutes, but I'm like, kudos to Taylor Sheridan for not cutting good footage to fit in that hour frame.
Good for him.
I was so glad, but yeah, I was like, I don't know that an hour is enough to wrap all this up, but goodness, an hour and 35 minutes was perfect. Okay, to start this episode off, well, I guess first of all, the title for this was No Such Thing as Fair, which we find out where that title comes from pretty early on. It's in one of the first scenes. But in the very first scene, it's as if Beth blames Rip for allowing John to go into the restaurant, knowing that there were armed men in there. She kind of like rolls with her back towards them when he's trying to like kiss her goodbye or whatever. And Rip tells her quick that he doesn't control John. John makes his own decisions and he does what he thinks is right. He also makes the comment that she wasn't worried about him going into that restaurant. And she says that she never worries about him. Nothing will ever happen to him. And he tells her that everybody's time eventually comes. And I'm like, I hope to God this is not like some foreshadowing. I've read on some online, I want to say it was actually a magazine that we you know, you see in the supermarket or whatever.
Right.
But,
right.
But one of them had talked about how kind of ominous that was. Like, I just, you know, I love Rip. So I'm like, oh yeah. Please, no.
I did not like that she said that. I'm like, no, don't say that. I don't like that. And that was really coming out of left field to me. Like, I didn't expect her character to react that way. I really didn't. Like,
yeah,
that was, I think it's good. And we'll talk more because we're going to get more into the scenes. But that was really like, oh, okay. And I think the softer side of Sears. No, it's the softer side of Beth that she really cares about her dad. And yeah. this is like a new way to show just how much she cares about her father in a way that we haven't seen before. So
it is.
That was really interesting. Yeah.
Okay. This is where the title comes in. But John takes time to teach Carter how to ride. So, you know, he's been going off on his like morning rides. Well, one day he takes Carter and he quickly gets tired of Carter's mouth. He tries to fix it by spooking Carter's horse and making him take off. And he says he's going to ride the foul right out of his mouth.
I like that he did that. It's something different. Like when a little kid, like when a kid cusses, it's like, that's not cool, kid. Like, don't say that. Like, you're just too young. And you're just too young to use those words, kid.
Adults, I don't even catch it anymore. I'm like, oh,
yeah. It's like, I didn't even notice that. Oh, no. Sorry.
But yeah, you're right. When a kid does it, you're like, oh.
Oh, that's jarring. Like, you're not old enough to use those words. Wait your time, like we did.
Yeah, exactly. So John takes Carter to Buffalo Valley and he tells Carter about how his grandfather, John's grandfather, helped save the buffalo. Mm-hmm. The army had come to ask his grandfather if he had seen any, and John's grandfather lied and said he hadn't, even though he knew where the buffalo were. After the army was gone and it was safe, he helps release the buffalo back into the Yellowstone Park. In telling Carter this, he says that the army wanted the buffalo gone because they also wanted the Indians gone. And the Indians were dependent on the buffalo.
Right.
Which is sad and terrible. And right. Carter says, that's not fair. And John says, let me tell you what fair means. Fair means one side got exactly what they wanted in a way the other side can't complain about. There's no such thing as fair. That's the title, but I'm like, oh, that was such a good line. How true. Yeah.
For real.
Such a good line. So when John gets back from his ride and he walks into the kitchen, he asks Beth to pour him a cup of coffee. And I have to say, I was not expecting her reaction here.
That was good. And I wonder, like, again, I just, it's not a new side of Beth. It's not surprising for her to throw the coffee mug, but just to be so upset. It's just so, it's cool. I really like where they took her with this.
Okay. And that was the next thing in my notes. The thing about this scene is we really get to see how much anger has built up in her over the past few months. It's kind of a combination of like anger and frustration, and it comes to a head in the scene because she tells John that his coma was a gift. He didn't have to see the pus and bile leaking out of all of his bullet wounds.
Which gross. Which is gross.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry. I'm like,
that's I was like, oh, that's gross. That's
but
I
it is very
that.
True. It's like right. when you are the caregiver and you're having to witness all of that, he's not having to see the day to day. Like she had to sit there with him. And so for him to go into that diner, it's like he's testing fate. Like you have already survived one big massacre and here you are again walking into danger for people you don't know. Now I fully get, you know, the heroics of it. Like John was not going to let those people die over, you know, like I think he says the change in their pockets.
Right.
But Beth isn't seeing it that way. Beth's seeing it from the daughter's perspective, the one that has sat there and fought for him and, you know, had to witness this horror of her dad, you know, being in the coma and all of his ailments after that, they thought they were going to lose him. So I fully see her point here, but it is so cool that we do get to see that side of Beth, you know, because she is angry a lot, but it's different. This
it's a
different here.
Yeah. She's angry because of everything you just said, like, because she cares about him so much. And you can see it, like, you can see this in her anger. And again, kudos to Kelly Riley, because she's such a great actress.
Yeah.
To see all of that, because I didn't even think about that. I was like, I didn't even think about how Beth would feel about him going into the diner. It was just like something that I was like, I thought about how good it would be for him as governor for his race.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, that's going to look really good for him to do that. And of course, we get into that too later when Jamie sees all the footage of that. But anyway, just to see her reaction is like, oh shit. Yeah, no, of course she would react this way because that's her dad and she loves him and she cares about him. And she just went through this whole traumatic thing with him almost dying before for not exactly the same reason, but close to it. I mean, yeah. he just got bombarded on the highway. And I really like this. Okay. Yeah. And you were going to talk about the climates. She says something specific. Yeah.
So right before that, though, he tries to explain to Beth. He says, you know, I try to do what's right in my heart. Mm-hmm. And you're right. At the climax of this argument, she says, you look for justice everywhere but in the mirror. And she turns her back to him and she takes off her shirt, exposing all of the burn scars on her back. Mm-hmm. And he tells her that it wasn't Jamie. And I like, she's probably about to lose it at that point, but he does tell her that it was Terrell Riggins. Mm-hmm. And that's the guy that's in prison for life, but he's the one that took out the hit on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's really been said before now, but John, in his mind, because, you know, we as viewers have seen how Jamie went to the prison, but John doesn't know any of this. So
right.
John's way of thinking about it is that he's basically an old crime boss trying to prove that he's still relevant and still mm-hmm. in control. And so his way of doing that was to show the other, like the gangs in prison or whatever, or the other gangs outside of prison, that he's still in control by taking out a hit on such a prominent family. We know that that's not true, but that is his way of thinking. And it was kind of interesting to see.
Yes, I'm glad they put that out there, because this whole time I'm thinking, well, John knows it was just orchestrated by him, but that wasn't the person who ordered it. I didn't realize that of course, again, Crystal and Lena know this is just a show. This is not reality.
exactly.
But I didn't know that he was taking it that way. But what a great way to see it. Like, oh, it's mm-hmm. just some guy who wants to prove that he's still in control in prison. Oh, no, there's a whole other side of the story, but nobody knows about it except for Jamie.
Exactly. Exactly. And mm-hmm. so Beth still cannot understand, like, she can't grasp why he hasn't went after Terrell Riggins.
Mm-hmm.
And
but which he was actually going to go after him.
He was
in the previous episode.
Yeah. He just doesn't say anything about it to Beth in this scene. But he asked Beth, he says, are you asking me to waste my life on that piece of shit? And she goes to storm out and she says, no, Daddy, that's what my life is for. And again, we hear the frustration in her voice. She's fought so hard for her dad and for all of his dreams with the ranch and mm-hmm. with preserving the land for future generations. And
with the attacks on her. I mean, she had the attack on her life. Yeah,
exactly. And I think mm-hmm. that she still at heart is expecting her dad to want to seek justice for both her and Casey and mm-hmm. him. Like, she's wanting right. him to step up and do that. Mm-hmm. And truthfully, he always has. So she can't understand why this instance is different.
And I think it's a part, like, well, number one, he was going to do that with Donnie. He was going to go to Sheriff Donnie and like say, hey, something bad needs to happen to this guy in prison and deal mm-hmm. with it. But of course, all of that got thrown up, you know, like it all went out the window because of the hostage situation and the guys robbing the place. And then now I feel like John's just tired. It's like,
me too.
You know, he's like, you know what? One of my friends died. I'm not going to go after this guy. Like, I don't know. I just feel like maybe he's just taking a break. Like maybe he's just like, I'm going to see what I can do and figure this out. But I feel like he's so tired. Or maybe
he thinks like there's other battles to fight. Like this man's already in prison. Like what is the point? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, he's already been put away for life. So what is the sense in me doing something to possibly get him in trouble?
Exactly.
Over this piece of shit, you know? The next thing is Summer calls John and tells him that the DA is asking for life in prison for her protesting the airport. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm like, she shoved a cop. Like,
and then she got her face busted in by he turned around and hit her in the face with the baton, like knocked her out cold. So it was kind of like, really? Like, she is.
I'm like, listen, I know that people are in jail literally for pot and they have like these long sentences in states that are now they have it legal.
So
that makes no sense to me. But in this circumstance, and again, we know this is fictional, but
yeah, we know it's like, a fictional show.
How in the hell can you justify a life sentence for that? But and we'll find out later, it's a accumulation of all of her past stuff that's now making them want to like put the hammer down, you know. It's not just necessarily this, it's kind of really her way of thinking that they're fighting against. So diner shooting is on the news and we see Jamie and his whole little posse watching it, and you know, Jamie is immediately like, oh shit.
Here's my take. Christina's over there like smiling like a damn fool. I'm like, really? You think this is good? Like, you think this is a good thing? Like, Jamie knows what's up. Jamie's like,
he does.
This isn't good. And she's all over there. Good
publicity for John.
Right. And she's thinking, oh, only for the ranch. And he already had the guy. Nah, I don't think you know what's up, Christina. I don't think you realize how many people will support that. Like,
I was going to tell you, and half my notes, like I can share with everybody. It's so funny because I'm like typing her name, like through my notes. And I'm like, Christine, the next line, it's Christina. The next line, it's Christine. I'm like, what is her damn name?
What is her name?
I just don't like her.
I just see stupid Christine, stupid Christine.
Yeah. The next line.
Nothing against the actress that plays her, guys, but she dumb.
Exactly. I'm like, and damn if stupid Christine isn't telling him otherwise.
Right.
Oh my gosh. But he, like you said, he knows exactly what's up. He's seen this. I mean, hell,
right.
Anybody who like follows politics, you know, he, which surprises me again, I know it's not real, but like Christine was in a big, huge campaign. Wasn't she on like the Obama campaign?
She was,
or something in her backstory. So, I'm like, girl, you got to know that in a small localized area, when the man who's running for governor also like saves a ton of people from armed robbers, it's probably not going to look good on the opponent, you know, like it's anyways,
it's just going to make him look good.
Exactly. But exactly.
Anyway. Yeah.
Regardless, Christine wants Jamie to separate himself completely from John Dutton. She says in that scene, you know, he's saying that he is the opposite of progress. And she said, well, you be the face of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, girl, you dumb.
Yeah. You don't know what's going on.
You dumb. But anyways, so she takes him and she's like, just separate from John. And then she's wanting to introduce his real alleged
his real dad, father, his bio dad.
Yeah.
Right.
To the public. And he's like, you know,
about that.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, so did she not know he was in prison? Because it didn't sound like it. So Jamie like says, well, you know, he's been in prison. And she's like, what for? And he says, murder.
Murder.
And then she's like, who? And he said, my mother. And then she loses it.
Of course she does. It's just getting worse and worse. It's like, oh, he was in prison. Oh, for what now? Okay.
Exactly. And then part of me wonders, like, does she think that she's now on his radar? Like, is it one of those? Oh, me too. I'd be like, I'd be worried.
I'd be like, I think killed somebody. Else I gotta go do.
Exactly.
Yeah. I gotta go see somebody. Yeah. I gotta take the kid somewhere and we're gonna be gone for a little while.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. I mean, if you, oh, it just, for all of her like political knowledge, it's like you can't do a background check on his bio dad. Like you didn't think to do that before he decided to run for governor.
Yeah. And I honestly, I think, you know, she's in a sticky situation if you think about it, because Randall, he could easily kill her. Like, oh, you're threatening to leave my son and take the kid? Yeah, you're not going to. So I'm like, oh, she's probably like, oh shit.
Right. Yeah.
So then after saying, you know, he needs to separate himself from John, now she's like, so you need to separate yourself from your dad, your bio dad. It's like, yeah, duh.
But yeah.
She tells him, for somebody so brilliant, you are so stupid, because, you know, the second he runs for public office, his birth certificate's going to become public record. And the RNC, which I'm like, what is that?
I think it's Republican National.
Okay. Okay. Because at one point they had talked about him being an independent. So yeah.
Right. Yeah. But, so I guess that means John is running under the Republican ticket and Jamie's going to be Democrat or independent.
Yeah. Must be.
Yeah.
Which would make sense because, okay. So then she says the RNC will run a background check and will start digging up dirt on him, which makes sense if they are the opposing, but anyways.
Right.
But then, like I said, she says, okay, well then you need to like put space between you and Randall, like his bio dad. I'm like, yeah.
And you know, it's so funny because it's like, yeah, Jamie didn't think about this. Like even now, I mean, couldn't they figure that out now in his role as attorney general? Like,
I would think
that
so.
Be a big thing that would come up.
Because he's already it's public office.
We know it's a show, guys. We know it's a show. Okay.
I'm like, listen, we do.
We know it's a show. And this is the only time that we talk about it.
Exactly. Exactly. Aside from like my family, this is the only time. So John goes to visit Summer at the jail.
Oh goodness. And okay. We called it.
We did. And it was somebody I wasn't expecting because I don't know who this man is, but
I don't either.
I had kind of anticipated, and we talked about it last week, that the guy that Jamie had such an issue with that was in law enforcement would be the next sheriff or the interim sheriff. Well, it's not. So when John goes to visit Summer at the jail, he finds out that this man named Ramsey is going to be the interim sheriff. And he even says, I don't know who Sam is, but he's like, oh, not Sam. And they're like, no, it's Ramsey.
Yeah. It's like, who's Sam? I don't know who Sam
is. Yeah. I don't know who that is, but it was not what John was expecting. And that comes into play because Ramsey now makes it like abundantly clear that he is not up for any shenanigans. He's going to go by the letter of the law. And he makes like some snide remarks about Donnie. And I didn't write them down, but it was basically, you know, he did his manner of justice based on who was paying the best.
Right. The highest bidder or something bidder. He said he was like a gambler and a drunk or something. And I was like, oh, too soon. Like,
yeah.
He said this really good line at the end. I don't know if you caught it, but John said something like new rules. Mm-hmm. And Ramsey says, nope, same old rules. I'm just upholding them or enforcing them
or something. Yeah. I remember that.
It was a good line. I was like, oof, that's a good one. That's a good one. And so we knew like this new sheriff, he's not going to be too keen on like turning his head or, you know, like sweeping things under the rug. Like John's going to have to be, he's going to have to watch out. It sounds like.
It does. Yeah. And it doesn't sound like he's going to do any favors for Summer either. Ramsey lets John in to see Summer and her attorney, and Summer's attorney is wanting to figure out a plea deal, which I understand, but she kind of surprises me a little bit because, you know, we're looking at it as viewers, of course, and thinking, okay, these charges are like ridiculous sentences for these charges, but she is wanting to kind of give and take a little bit. So she's mm-hmm. wanting to give them some of them and then try to have them lessen it because of that, which I right. get. I get that it's yeah. a balance and stuff, but it did surprise me a little bit with that. And she knows that Summer is not going to go off scot-free in this at all.
Right.
It's, you know, it's a different place. I think one of them makes reference to this not being Portland, you know, there is right. space in yeah. their jails. They can oh, make right. an example.
Yeah,
and I'm like, how true.
Not being afraid to fill up the jails. And I was like, oof, not good, Summer. Not good.
No, she's in a tough spot.
Yeah.
And Summer speaks alone with John and begs him to talk to the judge. And it's here that they admit that they had sex. And I mean, we kind of speculated.
Yes. I felt kind of bad for John's ego, because she's like, you're gonna be the last man. And I'm like, hey now, hey.
Okay. I know.
Like, I'm let's like, just be nice.
Listen, there's a lot of women in America who would not be upset about that. But yeah, again, it's a show.
We know,
but,
it's a show.
But yeah, I was like, oh my gosh. You know, we speculated about it, but I really like those two. So
I would have liked to see more. I would have liked to see more.
I'm really hoping that next season we do get more of Summer and John. Like, I'm really hoping.
Yeah, for sure.
John tells Summer to tell them that she's sorry. And she says, but I'm not sorry.
Mm-mm.
And then she drops the bomb that Beth was the one that told her to protest the airport. And so John dun, dun, dun. Knows. Yeah, John knows immediately. He knows his daughter's heart, you know, and
right.
he was kind of against Summer from the get-go. So
right.
that's a whole complicated situation, which we'll get into in a few minutes. But
right.
this is where he learns that, yeah, Beth was behind this. So Casey, I literally in my notes have Casey tells the circle, but it's really Casey, Mo, Rainwater, and I feel like maybe some other men, but I don't really remember. Yeah. They're in a circle and he tells them about seeing the wolves. And, or I guess the wolf multiple times, like he keeps right. seeing that image, the animal, and the wolf is Casey's spirit animal. So we've talked about this. It's so funny. I loved this part, and it's, the symbolism is just so cool. And so Mo tells Casey, but carrying the wolf is a burden. He is the hunter most hunted, the killer most killed. He says, the wolf exists to manage the spread of man. Man exists to manage the spread of the wolf. Now, this makes me wonder, is this why Casey is never at peace?
That's so good.
I love that. That
is so good.
I love that so much, because I'm like, he literally is always at war with himself. You know,
that
he
makes
always,
so much sense.
It does.
Oh my gosh. I love it.
It does. And so when Mo said that, I'm like, that is absolute perfection, because we have seen that so much in Casey's character. I mean, you know, it's not like he sets out to murder people. He doesn't do that.
Doesn't do that.
And it is always like a battle with him, you know,
it's right.
like, I'm trying to think, you know, he's always torn between the reservation and his dad. And
right.
there's just so much turmoil in that man's life. And I'm like, that makes so much sense, because when Mo put it into perspective about, you know, the wolf
it's
existing
like the yin
to manage
and yang
the
of it
spread.
All.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I'm like, that is just perfect.
It is. It's really good.
I loved like, that.
Oh, yes. It was so cool.
Casey asked why the wolf is protecting him. And, you know, they don't really know, but Mo offers to teach Casey. And so he's going to have him do this ritual, which is like the Hambleka. I hope I'm saying that right.
I didn't catch it in the show. So all I'm doing is reading it. And I'm like, I don't want to say it, because I don't want to butcher it. But yeah, I mean, I would say Hambleka.
Yeah. It was something like that. It's a cry for a vision. Mo offers to take him up on the mountain to do this, to try to find what his path is.
And I have information on the ritual, because it's real. So it's crying for a vision. And I got this information from the Acta Lakota Museum and Cultural Center. So you can, it's a quick Google search. You can look at it on their website. It comes right up, but it's an Indigenous person, Native American person usually undertakes a vision quest in an isolated area. They go without food or water, and the seeker remains isolated as long as it takes to achieve whatever goal. And so it could last up to 3 or 4 days. And I remember them talking about that. And of course, we're going to get into that later on because we see what happens in the finale. But anyway, so the quest, it varies according to the tribe's culture and the purpose for seeking a vision. Okay. But a successful vision quest will produce contact with a spirit helper or guide. And then the guide presence is often signaled by a visionary experience or contact with an animal.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And then all men and women, this is also in from the cultural museum. It says all men and women can cry for a vision or what the black elk calls lament, but only the worthy will receive a vision.
Okay.
And so sometimes there's a holy man that advises, he advises the seeker and interprets the vision.
Mm-hmm.
But it says the most important reason for the vision quest is so a person can understand better his or her oneness with all things and gain knowledge of the great spirit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it's good because we're going to see a lot of this.
We are going to see a lot of this. I've said this so many times on this podcast, but I love that they bring in the Native American culture.
And they get it right.
They do.
It's not like they're just going, they do their research and they represent the culture in such a way that it's not exploitative. Like, I don't think they're exploiting them. I think they're trying to call attention
and awareness
to the real, and awareness for sure.
And kudos to Taylor Sheridan, because I really think he put so much effort into getting it right. So
I think he does too. My family does not like him as an actor, but he's a hell of a writer. He's a hell of a showrunner for sure.
Yes. Yes. I'm interested to see what they think after the finale with, because I think that there's a little bit of, we'll get into it next episode, but there is a little bit of a redeeming quality in him in that episode. John goes into, I don't think it's the diner that they were in when the robbers were there. He goes into
a different one.
Yeah. And he sees Garrett Randall, and Randall says, like, you know, obviously there's some tension, but okay. Me being my little true crime self, I was like, John, don't turn your back to him. He's sitting there sipping his coffee.
He's
and I'm like,
there,
don't, just very blasé. And I'm like, oh, don't turn your back to him. He's a snake in the grass. But Randall, in that conversation, he says, I prayed for a bird to fly by my window so I'd have proof of some better place than the hell you put me in. And then he goes on to say, you could have told them about her. You could have told her what she had become. I'm like, John cuts him off there though. And he says, she became what you made her. Then you killed her for it. And again, there's such a familiarity between John and Randall's wife. Like, you feel like in that conversation, and you're like, I wonder if that theory is not true, because he either was a very close friend of hers and saw like the aftermath of her getting with Randall. There's something there.
And I would love to see I need to see how this went down. Like, I want for them to bring in what's his face, Josh Lucas.
Yes.
Who does young Kevin Costner. I want them to bring him in, and like, I need to see the scene play out. Like, I want to see what happens between the three of them. Like, what was the relationship? Because if this was around the time that Jamie was a baby, that means that John's wife is still alive.
Yeah.
So was he with this woman and he was cheating on his wife with her? Or had he been with her and then he met his wife and she met this other guy and became this, you know, drug addict and stuff? I don't know. I'm so torn. I'm like, I don't want John to be too, like, to be cheating on his wife with this other woman.
No, because I feel like really loved her. He really loved her.
Yeah, I feel like he loved her.
He still deals with that today.
Yeah, it's really strange. And the more I'm listening, I'm like, well, you know, he talks about, you know, bringing up Jamie as his own. And I'm like, maybe he wasn't with this woman. Maybe he was with her, but then he met his wife, or she met Randall. Maybe she left him. I don't know, but it's very, I just need to see like what happened there. I really need to know the backstory. I would love to see that come about in season 5 and learn the backstory between John, Randall, and this woman who got killed. I would just love to see that.
And I really feel like Taylor Sheridan is excellent. We saw this season at mm-hmm. wrapping up little things or bringing mm-hmm. things back into the spotlight, like Avery. You know, Avery left so abruptly, and then we were like, but where'd she go? And then she came back this season. So I really do feel like he's going to bring that up at some point. Now, and I'm impatient. I want it today.
I know. And it says, when he said that to John, he said, better than the hell you put me in. So did John testify against Randall at his hearing?
That's what I wondered. I wondered.
Because he's saying he put him there.
Yeah.
So it's like, and then he's like, you could have told them about her. Like, what? So he testified against you? And, I really want to know. I really want to know.
Okay, so to come off of that,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if you caught it, but he made some comment to the jail guard when he was walking in. Do you remember that?
No.
Yeah, he said something, and the man said, like, oh, I wouldn't expect you to come through this way, or something like that.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. No, I do remember that. And he brought a lot of people in the back.
Yes. So I'm like, was he one of the ones that found him to bring him in? I don't know. But yeah, that was interesting to me.
More to ponder. Okay.
Yes. So much to ponder. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Before John leaves the diner, he threatens to rid the world of Randall should he ever come after him. Like, should
he Randall? He doesn't know that he already came after him once.
I know. No clue. But and then he lets him have the Salisbury steak. He says it's the best in Montana or whatever. It's just kind of a big F you, like, as he's walking out.
Yeah.
Okay, so Jimmy thinks that he's leaving the 4-6s for just a week. He's going to go and help with horses at this big event, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he and Emily are canoodling outside.
Oh, I loved it. I love that moonlight.
I love it. The stars are so pretty.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say here, I love Emily. Like, I am team mm-hmm. Emily. I freaking love her. And you know who she looks like to me? It was killing me. I'm like, I was like watching her and I'm like, God, who does she look like? She, to me, looks like a brunette version of Carrie Underwood, like her face for some reason.
Oh,
like
really?
Face shape. Yeah. I don't know. It was bothering me.
I was thinking she looked like my sister. Oh, I'm like, she looks like my sister.
Well, there's that connection for Kelly too. Yeah. So she asked Jimmy how she's different than Mia.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells her that Mia liked the potential in him, but Emily likes him for who he is right now. And I think that is so true.
She took him as who he was, not who he could be, and not what he could be for her.
Yes.
Like that, she didn't need him to be anything other than who he was. Yes. And I really love that.
Me too. I love that. And him putting that into words, I'm like, that's exactly what it was, because he was never going to live up to the image that Mia had in her head of what he should be. He was never going to be that. No. And Emily just likes him straight for who he is.
Yeah, exactly.
I loved that. So he's at this event. Rodeo by Cody Johnson is playing. I love that song.
I Shazam that song, and it came up as Dear Rodeo, and it said Cody Johnson and Reba McEntire.
There is a version with Reba McEntire. Okay. Yes.
Well, that's the one that popped up on my phone, and I like that version. Yeah. And I love that song too. It was really good.
You are so right. It's not Rodeo. It's Dear Rodeo. Sorry.
Oh, okay. No, that's fine.
But yes, yes, yes. So there is one with him just alone. And then there is one with Reba McEntire. I love the Reba version too.
Okay, awesome.
And I had actually heard the song before it played on Yellowstone. And I was like, oh, I love this song.
Oh, nice.
But it was perfection in this
right
scene, because he's sitting there just kind of longingly watching this.
Yeah.
And I literally, in my notes, I have, again, I know I talk about the songs, but honestly, whoever is picking the music for Yellowstone, kudos. Like, it's just so good.
It is. And I, you know, I downloaded the like slower version of Cowboy and Me by Tim McGraw. Yes. I had to download it, 'cause I'm like, I love this song.
Good.
I have to listen to this. It is so good.
It's so good.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. The music is amazing.
Yes. I got a little bit of clarification, because I think I've even stumbled across this with previous episodes, because I'm like, it's not really a rodeo. Like, it's not, when I think of rodeo, I think of like bull riding.
Right.
And bronc riding and
right
and roping.
There's
and
roping
stuff like that.
But
yeah,
there's also the bull riding. The bull riding is a big aspect, I feel like, of a rodeo.
It's huge. Yeah. And
again, so, I'm not a cowgirl either.
100%. Again, preach. I am not a cowgirl. But I did get some clarification. So, you know, I grew up going to rodeos with my dad, and I'm like, this doesn't fit. This isn't what right this is. And so mm-hmm I talked to Reba. And she is, in fact, a cowgirl.
Yeah.
But she says this event that they were doing there was a reining cow horse event, from what she explained. And so I hope I'm getting this right. There's the reining cow horse event, and mm-hmm then there's cutting. Now, cutting can be its own thing, or it okay can be one third of the reining cow horse event. So it can either, like, they can either have like a separate cutting event, or it can be part, like, the one third of the reining cow horse event. So,
oh,
okay, hope I got that route right. Mm-hmm. But a little bit of fun local trivia. So we're in, you know, rural Florida. We had Luther White. He's from a very prominent family around our area. Mm-hmm. And when he was alive, he had a big cutting operation. And so when they, because of that, and because of that operation, there used to be a lot more events in this area that where they did cutting and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But now, in relation to where we are, there's some events down south and some in the panhandle, but a lot of times these reining cow horse events or cutting events are primarily out west. It's not something that we see frequently down here.
And it does seem like when we were younger,
yeah,
for sure, we saw,
I feel like I went to those.
Oh yeah. I remember going to some, but it does seem like now there's nothing.
And they do have,
and it's kind of sad.
They do have rodeos, but it's, like I said, it's separate from what this is. And mm-hmm so when we see this, those horses are so trained. It's incredible. It's like, I think you had talked about Amber saying, like, for a horse to do this, it's a big deal, you know?
Right, right.
It's such a big deal. So that's Alita's little trivia fun fact this week.
These events are not rodeos.
Yes, they're not rodeos, even though Dear Rodeo was playing.
You're right.
Okay, so in this, though, Travis is there. Travis is at that event. And Travis tells Jimmy that he must have learned quite a bit from the 4-6s because they sent him to help at the event. And Jimmy tells Travis that he was right about everything. It truly is just him and the horse. And I think he even makes reference to that old timer from in Texas.
Right, right.
Who had said, you know, it's like performing without an audience, basically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you see this is the redeeming, I thought it was in the next episode, but this is the redeeming scene with Travis, because, like, you see, it's almost like it comes across his face and he realizes that Jimmy has grown up. Jimmy has become a cowboy. And mm-hmm so he's talking to Jimmy about it, and he tells him, you know, I think Jimmy says, well, I guess that's not true because, you know, you just performed in front of an audience or whatever. And Travis is quick to tell him, yeah, but that's not cowboying. What you do is cowboying. What I do is showing off. So it's still different, you know, like it was just very sweet. It was like, no, what you are doing, it really is cowboying. It was super sweet. But then he tells him that the Yellowstone is now bought. I hate saying bought half, but like they're half owner.
They're half owner
in Metallic Cat, which we've talked about previously too. Metallic Cat is just a quick refresher. He is the second highest stallion in the history of the NCHA. So between him and like all of his, what is it? Progeny, trying to think of the
offspring.
Word. Offspring, like millions and millions and millions of dollars. It's incredible.
And this is true. Like this is reality.
True. This is true about Metallic Cat.
Like, yeah, I mean, like,
you know, the Yellowstone is not part owners, but
right, it's fictional, but this is a true thing with this horse. Like he's worth millions and his offspring worth millions. And that is crazy to me that kind of thing is, I mean, like that's a real thing. Like,
yeah,
it blows my mind.
I know. And again, I'm like, the accuracy of this, you know, again, it's just incredible. All of the little details that Taylor Sheridan brings into it and does highlight, you know, because that is a real thing in the horse world. So it's very cool to me. Jimmy learns here though, that he's now going to be returning to the Yellowstone. So
and I'm like, how long was he there? I mean, I don't know. I don't know the scope. I don't know the time frame here. Like,
well,
was it a few months?
I thought about that too. Half a year.
I don't know.
I thought about that too, because I'm like, okay, so you think about it. Jimmy, like, it's almost like two separate spectrums of time. Okay. So
right.
In the Yellowstone, it doesn't seem like there's been much time pass at all because, you know, we've seen kind of everything play out and it really hasn't been that much time. But then on Jimmy's spectrum, it seems like it's been months that he's been at the 4/6. So I'm like, the two don't really compute to me. I'm like, I tried thinking about that too, because I'm like, and I just couldn't wrap my mind around it. I'm like, it's fictional.
It's fictional. It's just not real.
I just can't wrap my head around it.
He grew up in a hurry.
He did. We're all proud of Jimmy.
But he has to tell Emily that he's going back to the Yellowstone.
He does. And he tells Emily that he gave John Dutton his word and he can't break it. And this is the difference right here between Emily and Mia. Emily she's like, well, I respect that. I don't like that, but I respect that. And Mia would have been all, choose me over him.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Gross.
But I was like, oh, it's so hard. And she, you know, wants to say goodbye quick and walk off and just, oh. Yeah.
Sometimes I can't catch what she's saying. Sometimes she's a little low and she's like, might as well rip this off like a band-aid. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Okay. So Beth, Rip, and Carter are at the table in the new room with dinner
already set up.
The new table. And John walks in and insists that they eat in the dining room that night. And Beth asks why. And he says that he likes eating in the new room at the new table, but he and Beth aren't going to enjoy this dinner. And you're like, oh shit.
It's about to hit.
You know, she's about to toe to nasty to him. Like it's coming.
It's coming. And it's like, they're not going to eat. They're just going to drink wine
and yell. That's all they're going to do. Rip and Carter bail. Rip is almost laughably leaving. He's just like, catch me later after your ass whipping or whatever. And I was going to ask you, did you notice in this scene that Carter has picked up a little something from Rip? But actually, I think it was Rip and Beth, because he says discretion is the better part of valor. And I'm like, I've heard Beth use that thing or that quote.
The phrase.
Uh-huh. Yeah, phrase. Thank you. And I've heard Rip use it and I'm like, oh, he's been around them. It was just a little tidbit, but I'm like, oh, he's picked that up.
He's picked it up. I know. It was so cute. I'm like, oh, look at him.
Yeah.
Understanding the ways of the family.
Yes. And so Rip tells Beth that Rip tells Beth there's always a bigger bear than her. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, again, this is reflective of, you know, her telling It was Bob Schwartz. She says, I'm the bigger bear. Yeah, it was Bob Schwartz. Anyways, so when Beth enters the dining room, she refuses to sit down, and John finally makes her sit down, not like forcibly, but like by his words.
Tells her. Yeah.
And he gives her a tongue lashing about Summer being in jail. And Beth flat says she does not care. She basically says, I don't care if she rots in prison. I don't care if she gets out. I don't care. This brought up the difference between John and Beth's fighting. I think John tries to do a direct hit to the exact person that he is trying to attack. Beth, it's kind of two part though with Beth, because she did not like Summer. She did not like Summer with her dad. So it was a convenient, innocent bystander, I guess, with her.
Yeah.
You know,
I think that made her not so innocent to Beth.
Yeah.
I think that kind of made it a little less harsh. Like, well, you know, yeah, I'm getting her out of my dad's life.
Exactly. It's almost like a two-parter with that, though. It's I really don't think Beth cares about like innocent bystanders. Like, it's her family. She doesn't really care about the casualties. But here, I do think that this also was convenient, a convenient way to get Summer out of her hair. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I was like, oh. And John is very direct with Beth about this. And he tries to impress upon the importance of morality in fighting. And she's just not, she's kind of indifferent, like through the,
she is
in the
she
beginning.
Really is.
She's just like, I don't care. And John finally says to her, my kingdom, my rules. We fight with dignity and you aren't. We don't kill sheep. We kill wolves. And John asked Beth if she did it because he f***ed Summer. And this is the part that literally ripped my whole heart out. John tells Beth that he's disappointed in her and never thought he'd say that about her. And then he tells her that he may need to fight this battle alone and she may need to go somewhere while he does that. And she says, but this is my home. And he says, well, maybe it's time you find a new one. Crystal, I'm telling you what, I woke up at like 3 a.m. the next morning and the words were haunting. I'm like, again, I know this is fictional, but I'm like, holy cow. If you thought about your dad saying that or my dad saying that, I'm like, oh, that's just,
that would just cut you to your core.
Yeah.
And it seems like he's never said that ever to her, no matter what she's done, no matter her growing up super wild. It sounds like he's never said those words to her. Mm-hmm. So it's like even more cutting so just deep.
Ouch. Yeah. It was.
And then I'm like,
so harsh.
Kind of like, you know, he just asked you to move in and now he's telling you to move out.
That's exactly what I thought. I was like, damn, she just moved in last week.
I know. Been a month. Maybe it's been 2 months. Who knows? I don't know.
Who knows? What is time?
What is time?
I can only imagine in this moment that Beth is thinking about every single battle she's fought for her dad. And she's almost lost her life several times, you know, and now everything she's fought for is hanging in the balance. Not to mention what's going to happen if she has to leave the ranch. What about Rip?
Yeah. It's like, well, how does that work out? What do we mean?
Yeah.
And cut scene. The scene.
Yes. Jimmy goes to see Emily. You know, she was ripping the Band-Aid off. She was saying bye really quickly and walking off. And he goes back to her house and he asks her to wait on him.
I love this line because she said, I'll wait. And he's like, wait for me. Oh, it was so good. I was like, my heart. Oh, I loved
know.
It.
And I loved this too. He says, I'm not saying goodbye. I'm keeping you.
Oh, Jimmy.
Goosebumps. And I said, oh my gosh, how far Jimmy has grown. And again, a song. I love the song. It's Break My Heart Sweetly by John Moreland. But
I'm going to have to download that one.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to get that one too. Yeah.
Okay. So when John and Beth were having their dinner/argument, nobody ever eats in that dining room. I'm convinced.
No.
Poor Gator.
Poor Gator.
So much wasted food. Rip and Carter dipped out and they went to the bunkhouse. This scene is so funny to me. So Carter is a little card shark And he's like, I've never played poker, basically. And he goes in and he's beating all of them. Mm-hmm. And Teeter is, I would say, without words, but she has a whole slew of words.
Oh, man, it was all bad. It was all so bad.
I know.
It's so funny.
It's basically just a bunch of obscenities all together, strung all together. It's so funny. And you can tell, like, Rip is so, he's proud in that moment. It's funny. It's like, this is his, I don't know. He's had his hand in helping this kid.
Right.
I don't want to say raise, like, he's not raised this kid.
Because, they don't want to raise him. They don't want it to be their son, but he's had a hand in his, like, development, I guess.
Yeah, he's just very proud in that moment. You can see it. So Beth walks to the door and Walker sees her and Walker steps out. And I'm like, oh God, where's this going?
Because I'm thinking, are you about to blow your life up? Like, are you about to blow up everything? Come on now, Beth, don't do this. Like, oof, it was a little scary at the second.
I thought the same thing. She tells Walker that she just lost the one thing that she spent her entire life fighting for. And she's worried about what else it will cost her. Obviously, she's worried about Rip, you know?
Right.
I mean,
right.
This is all just blown up in her face. Mm-hmm. And she asks Walker to play her a sad song. And then it cuts back to Carter in the bunkhouse and he fits right in. Like, he's cussing. I love Carter. And like I said, Rip is eating it up. He's so proud of Carter. And Lloyd is like looking at, he's like, what are you laughing about? And Rip is just, he's just proud. It's heartwarming. So Walker offers to actually play Beth a happy song. And she said, no, she wants something to cry to.
She said something like, she can't cry for herself, so she'll cry to a song.
Yeah.
Something along those lines.
Yeah. His song that he chooses to play is about a man who is killed, but that wasn't ready to die. Mm-hmm. And so Beth starts sobbing. And of course, Rip has to walk out of the bunkhouse and see this. And so he sees Beth crying to Walker's song. And now, okay, I do want to ask you this, because I've thought a lot about this moment, because I'm like, my gut instinct would think that Rip is pissed, like, immediately because of the history. I mean, they've had history. And so at first I'm like, oh God, he's going to be pissed. Mm-hmm. But then do you also think maybe he might be a little bit, I mean, it's literally in a glance. That's the only thing I'm talking about right here is when he walks out and sees it. I also wonder, I'm like, is he upset because Beth didn't come to him and he's supposed to be her person? And then the more I thought about it, I was like, it might be that he's at such a place with Beth. It's kind of like a mutual respect. I mean, he sees they're not doing anything. Like, Walker's literally playing a song and she's sobbing. He knows some shit went down at the house. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it's not such a respect that it's like, I'm going to give you this moment. Like, this is what you needed in this moment. Like,
I think so. I think he knows, maybe she wants him to see her a certain way and she doesn't want him to see her fall apart.
That could be it. Yeah.
And she has this weird, we've talked about it before. She has this bond with Walker. She has this weird thing with Walker where, like, I mean, there's no, I don't think there's any romantic inclination anymore, but she's just got this bond with him. And I think that he's kind of the outsider, not in the group, but he always seems like he's been an outsider. Mm-hmm. So she kind of connects with him in that way. And maybe that was just a way to get out what she needed to, because she didn't want to burden, because also she doesn't want to burden Rip with, like, her, if her father's disappointed in her, then maybe Rip would be disappointed in her too.
That's very true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good point. So after the next scene is Mo, and he's with Casey trying to help prepare him to go up on the hill. I'm like, is it a hill? Is it a mountain? It looks like a mountain, but then I think they reference a hill. So I don't know.
I don't know. I'm like, where's the cliff? You're supposed to go to the cliff. I don't understand.
Yeah, but I know. I think in my notes, I'm like, hill, mountain, hill. Mm. Yeah.
Mountainside, hillside. Who knows?
I don't know.
Hillside of the mountain.
What? I don't know. So Casey tells Mo, I'm not sure if I believe in all this. And Mo says, well, it sure believes in you. I thought this was really interesting because we've discussed this before, but Mo tells Casey, beware of the coyote. He's the trickster. You know, we've talked about the difference between how they view a wolf and how they view a coyote. And,
right,
you know, we had that discussion. I think it was in very end of season one or very beginning of season two, when Casey mm-hmm. sees what I presume to be the coyote get hit by the truck.
Right.
You remember that?
I do remember that.
But yeah. Now I'm like, oh, wow. I don't know animals.
I think it was a coyote. Yeah.
I think it was a coyote.
I think so.
But it is interesting to me. And they remember Rainwater also, right before he got arrested, looked up on the hill and there was the coyote. And they actually say that that one was a coyote. So you sometimes see that right before. And we will see this come into play next episode, because you're not going to see an image. And the only reason I knew about it was because I had the closed captioning on. But during some of his visions, you hear coyotes howling in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And it's during some of the visions. So just remember that is the trickster in the indigenous culture. So I thought that was interesting that he brought it back up. So Casey's going up on the hill or mountain to do the Himblecha, as I mentioned before, and we talked about. This means no water and no food for 4 days. And instantly, you know, Casey's kind of a survivalist. He's had to be, he was in the special forces. He says without water, he's going to die, like with no water for 4 days. And Mo says, you must stand on the cliff of death to understand your purpose in life. It's the only place you can stand and see it. Yeah. This is really important with the visions, and, you know, it's kind of his frame of mind at the time he's having the visions. That's, you know, why he is having the visions. Mo and Casey talk about Monica, and Casey says, she's better than I deserve. And Mo says, it doesn't work like that. God would never let her love someone that doesn't deserve her. I found this interesting because they are reminiscent of what words Casey literally just told Avery.
He said to Avery, God wouldn't let you love someone who didn't love you back.
Exactly. It just, and then it's, Mo it's says not that, exactly the same, but I was like, oh,
that it's a little weird.
It is.
That it's so close to what he said to Avery. And then what Mo says to Casey, mm-hmm. It is kind of weird. Like
it is, especially considering that Avery does come out in some of the visions.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, I just thought, I was like, oh, that's kind of reminiscent of that. So Mo, Rainwater, and Casey trek up the mountain to set up camp. I'm not trying to be rude in that statement. I just don't know what they call it. It's his place. They string what looks to be flowers, like a string of flowers.
They were making them earlier, like yeah. in the episode, they were making those, the little yellow, I know they had like little yellow paper. I think they were putting something in there and then they were like,
yeah.
right. And so I know they say like the doors when yeah. he's inside the enclosure, I yeah. guess we would call it. So it didn't really look like a circle. It looked more like a square.
Yeah. I think it was a square. I'm like, I know that he's supposed to be praying. So like the only thing I can kind of reference is like a prayer circle, but I'm like, it's not a circle, it's a square. So I'm not really sure. Anyways, I'm not meaning any disrespect about setting up camp,
For sure.
That's what it is.
For sure.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Or that's what it seems to be. Rainwater tells him, when you are without memories, without regrets to ponder, without fantasies to embrace or reject, what will you think of then? What comes to you will depend on how hard you pray.
I really like that. And I think that spans so many different, cultures have that kind of vision quest, the spiritualness, yeah. the meditation, the, you know, the going without, like pretty much starving yourself to have the vision, to have the enlightenment or the clarity. Mm-hmm. I think that speaks across so many different, like,
yeah,
of course, so many different Native American tribes, and also even further out, like So many different cultures have something like that.
Yeah, you even see that in like Christianity where you fast and pray. So yeah, it really does span a plethora of like cultures and religion as well.
Mm-hmm. That was it.
Yeah, I was reading the last line of my notes, I love again that they bring so much awareness to the culture. So I liked this. I think I had a coworker or somebody say, they're like, that seems weird. And I'm like, yeah, but I find it fascinating. Like I love seeing different cultures. And so the fact that he's ingrained this so much into the show, it's just incredible to me.
It really is. I feel like, and you know, we are just lowly podcasters. I mean, you know, if people have, I think he does an excellent job, but I don't know everything there is to know about this, you know, the culture or the lifestyle or whatever. So as just like a very scratching the surface kind of way, I feel like, yeah, he does a really good job of showing everything and not just trying to go off of, you know, what he's heard or stereotypical things. He really does try to bring awareness to the culture and to everything that's going on. So again, just one of the many reasons why we love Yellowstone so much. Please, Jefferson White.
It's very true. Yes.
Come invite us to the Yellowstone podcast, please. Yes, we have a lot to offer.
We will be happy to be there. I was going to say really quick, it just occurred to me, didn't you say that with the website that you used to look up the Hamblecha, wasn't that like in regards to the Lakota tribe?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it was very interesting to me and very sad actually, but my mom worked with a lady who was part of the Lakota tribe, and her family had, I think her mother had like 16 kids. Which God bless, like I can't even imagine, but I don't want to say her name, I guess, but my mom's coworker was actually one of the last Indigenous people that were sold. Back then they would do that if a family like just, you know, they had too many to their family or they didn't feel like they could provide, where we have adoption and stuff. They actually had that as an option. They could sell their child to, it was kind of like adoption, I guess, but yeah.
Oh, okay. So they were selling.
She was actually one of the last ones sold it was as a baby, and she went to a wonderful family, but it was just interesting. You know, she's probably around my mom's age. So if you factor that in, it was going on as late as that. I mean,
and think was a baby. You know, the sterilizations that they were doing too.
Yes.
Like that wasn't, you know, when you put it in perspective with the timeline, it's not that long ago. It's, it's still quite, it's crazy to me to think like, we don't see it as very close because we didn't grow up during that time period.
Yeah.
But our parents and our grandparents did.
Yeah.
And it's just crazy to think like, that's not that far from where we are today. I mean, I think where we are today is much better as far as culturally, but still it's so crazy to think.
But in
like,
the span of
how
history,
close
it really
it is.
Has not been that long.
No.
Yeah.
Wow. That gives me chills. Woof. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
Oh yeah, of course. I just thought about it. For some reason I thought about the name and I'm like, oh my gosh, it was the Lakota tribe. Yes. That's it.
All right.
That's the show.
Yeah. So season 4. Yes. What am I saying? Okay, so finale up next, like we are going to do the finale next, and that'll give you a little something to hold on to because who knows when season 5 will premiere.
Please be soon. But yeah, it will probably be at least a year.
Oh man. Okay. Well, we'll have the podcast.
Yes. Sad times.
Remember to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Search for Girl We Need to Talk.
And on all the platforms, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Thank you.